to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, June 18, 2024. The South Sudan police prevent protesters from marching in Jonglei State capital, Bor.
Children take the whole day without food, and we have become impatient, and that is the reason why we decided to go to the street. Our children are dying.
And some South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they worry about the future of their children.
Food is a problem. UNHRI is giving us 12,000. Ugandan ceiling, that is around $3 per month for food and all necessities of human. So life is difficult. Our kids are still at the home.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Security forces in the Jonglei State capital, Bor, stopped a protest against high cost of living in South Sudan. The protesters say food prices have tripled and civil servants have not received their salaries for months. Jonglei State government officials say the organizers did not have proper permit to hold a protest. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
40-year-old Bor resident Nyangong Ayuen is a mother of 8 children. She says the economic situation in the country has forced her to take to the street to demand the transitional government take action.
Our living condition has become worse. One meal a day is not longer there. Children take the whole day without food, and we have become impatient, and that is the reason why we decided to go to the street. Our children are dying.
Ayuen says her husband is a government employee who has not received his salary for 9 months. Awokur, another Bor resident who took part in Monday's protest, says the Kiir administration has done very little to address the worsening economic conditions across the country.
This government has repeatedly promised election, but right now we won't reach that time of election. We need someone else to take over and rescue the economic situation. We will continue to go to the street. If Kiir Mayar continue to ignore us, we will never stop.
The protesters plan to deliver a petition to the office of the governor and the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, but were blocked by security forces. Deng Bolding, a civil society activist in Jonglei State, criticized the police for acting against the constitution of South Sudan, which protects the right to assembly and freedom of speech.
They were first stopped this side of Konayol. And they wanted to arrest them, but they negotiated their way through. But less than 100 meters, the police also came and camped there, now in a huge number. But of course, the constitution in this country has bestowed the supreme powers, you know, on the citizens. And those powers, the constitution said, can be exercised them directly, which is through civil disobedience means. One of them is what happened yesterday, the peaceful protest. So they are within the law, and nobody should be forced, you know, to suffer in silence.
Atong Kwal Manyang, acting governor of Jonglei State, says the police stopped the protesters because of permit issues.
Normally, when people are having peaceful demonstrations, the government has to be made aware. But in this case, the government was not informed. We just had the people on the road that are demonstrating. So what happened is that the government told them a letter doesn't need a very big crowd to be brought to the attention of the acting governor.
Kwal says the high cost of living is not only affecting the people of Jonglei, pointing out that it is a nationwide issue. Academic staff at South Sudan's public universities are threatening to walk off the job if the government continues to delay paying salaries. Awol Daniel Chuang, South Sudan's National Minister of Finance, told lawmakers last month that the government is unable to pay civil servant salaries due to a lack of financial resources. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Torit, where Sudanese refugees living in South Sudan's eastern equatorial state say they are worried about the future of their children as they settle into their new homes. The chairman of the Sudanese community in Torit urges aid agencies to support refugees with food, health and education in Arabic. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Sudanese refugees living in Torit are calling on relief agencies and the Eastern Equatorial State Government to help refugees in South Sudan. As-Sadiq Abdulrahman Mahmoud is the chairperson of Sudanese in Torit. He says refugees who escaped the conflict across Sudan to South Sudan need urgent support.
There's one challenge here facing people. Food ration moderation has affected Sudanese who came to South Sudan. We urge aid groups to intervene and offer health, education, and offer employment.
As-Sadiq says refugees living in camps face language and other cultural barriers. Rabbi Abdurrahim Adam, who was a lawyer in Sudan, says he flee from Khartoum to seek a new life in South Sudan. He says his journey was tough and full of challenges.
I was living in Bahr, and we chose South Sudan as our destiny. We moved from Khartoum to Rank, and we were sorry to see there were no services based on your financial status to support you for food and your onward journey. We stayed in Rank for 2 weeks, and we decided to travel to Juba. We stayed in Juba for a long time, but rent and life was unaffordable.
Adam says life in South Sudan is very difficult because there are few opportunities for the refugees.
Torit is better than Juba in terms of rent and life. The challenges we face here is you have no work and you have children, no health benefits, and education is a problem. There's no government helping you or non-governmental organizations, and that is what is happening.
As-Sakib urges the government of South Sudan to introduce special school program for Sudanese refugee children so that they can study in Arabic.
Our children are exposed to a different curriculum. The education system is not addressing our culture. The system in Sudan is different from South Sudan. This is the biggest problem affecting us.
World Refugee Day is an international day designated by the United Nations to honor refugees around the globe. It falls each year on June 20th and shines a light on the rights, needs, and dreams of those forced to flee from their homeland. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa, reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
From Torit, we move to Moyo District in northern Uganda, where South Sudanese refugees living in Palorinya refugee settlement say their condition is dire. Moni Johnson, a leader of the South Sudanese refugees, in Moyo District, says some families within the camp are not able to send their kids to school, and health care is also very expensive to most of the refugees who have no jobs.
Well, life here is really very difficult, and, you know, food is a problem. UNHRI is giving us 12,000. Ugandan shillings, that is around $3 a month. For food and all necessities of human. So life is difficult, even the school. Our kids are still at the home. You know, there are schools open specifically for refugees, but still they demand some payment. Some school fees need to be paid, and indeed we cannot afford at the moment.
So talk to me about the children who are not attending classes due to lack of school fees. How many are we talking about? Is the whole camp or is it just some individuals?
Some individuals, because some of the people they came from, specifically this camp belongs to refugees from Congo. And then we were relocated here. Just a number of South Sudanese, about, let me say, about 30 to 45 households. So now for us who have been relocated from other camps, we also find life here difficult. Since we left most of our things to the first camps where we were hosted, And again, we left all those things there. We were transferred here with without anything. So that the reason that makes us difficult to afford paying school.
A refugee camp is supposed to be your second home, where you will have a peace of mind to plan for your life. But you're telling me that the conditions in this camp is not very good, and people are just surviving on handouts. But how is that going to impact on your life and the life of your children?
Mr. John Tanja, you know, the history of South Sudanese, we had been in this life of refugees for so many years. And, you know, it started with our grandparents and then to our parents and then to us. So really, we have already lost hope in raising these kids, and our future is doomed. No longer bright, because we don't know what will happen. We don't know whether peace will come back to our country and we go back. We are still here. We really...
Talk to me about some of the services that you get there. You told me schools are there for refugees, but they demand for school fees. How about health? How about other basic services?
Yes, for the issue of health services, they are there. But, you know, sometimes if you go to the health centers, they will just prescribe the medicine and send you to buy from clinics. So what they normally have in the health centers, they are having this paracetamol. Paracetamol are always available, including this amoxicillin, but for other drugs you can't find at the facility unless you go and buy from the clinic.
What kind of drugs are you talking about? What kind of medicine?
Yes, for example, my daughter has been sick for the first 2 days, so when I took her there, you know, they examined her, and then they wrote some drugs to be bought from the private clinic. So what they gave me was only paracetamol and then some amoxicillin.
What are UNHCR officials saying when you're saying that these hospitals or these clinics are there but they don't have medicine? What are the people who are responsible for refugees telling you?
Here things are different. You know, when we complain, they will say things are okay, but you know, health services are being divided into different organizations. Like in this camp, health services is taken by MTI, that is Medical Team International. And for MTI, they write good report to UNHCR, because UNHCR is the main donor. So they write good reports that things are going on well. And for us, we are not allowed to speak direct to UNHCR. Sometimes it's difficult to assess, you know, communicating. And if you just tell a complaint to UNHCR, they may say that you are accusing them, something like that. So for us, we just keep quiet. We pray. We don't know what we can.
That's Muni Joseph, a leader of the South Sudanese refugees at Palorinya Refugee Settlement in Moyo District, northern Uganda. Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, funding cuts affect refugees across the world. Find out why after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. June 20, which is which is going to be on Thursday, is the World Refugee Day. To help mark the day, journalist Catherine Nambi went to the Dibidi refugee camp in Uganda near the border with South Sudan. She spoke to people about the struggle families face in getting education for their children. Here are some of their comments.
Thank you so much. My name's Herbert Simon Nigowani. I'm a refugee from South Sudan who came to Uganda in 2016 as a refugee. My best recommendation will go to the partners and the donors. Can they really try to look at the time frame for offering these funds to the donors, so as whenever the money is on the ground, it does not go for waste. For instance, starting activities on a late period, like when the rains have gone and you fund it, that is one. Two, the short duration time that is given to partners to run activities in this region also affects us. But to the government as a whole, I'd ask the government humbly to lobby more livelihood projects that can sustain us in building up the positive part of living in Bidibidi, then the infrastructure part of it, the service and economic part of it. To the central government of Uganda, we as refugees, we are ready to work and skillfully work to produce more. If we are given that provision of land, which is productive, not far away from us.
My name is Kuyunge Margaret. I am a refugee by status. I'm from Zone 3, Bidibidi Refugee Settlement. I appeal for the support to be given to our women in the settlement. They should be trained on skilling so that they are able to sustain their life and also get money out of the skills they have got. For an example, if they can be trained on tailoring, and then they can be trained on hairdressing, they can even be trained on liquid soap making or even soap making. This earns them a living. And then again, on agriculture, most of our people, the type of agriculture they are doing is not really the one which can give them money. For an example, when they can produce things like tomatoes, onions, and the cabbages, at least those ones can be bought in the market. So if they can be trained on that, at least it can improve their economic status.
Yeah, my name is Angoyo Henry Thomas. I'm in Ariwa 1 cluster within Bidibidi refugee settlement. And my request is, these people should be given alternative support, like in terms of livelihoods. If these people have been given startup capital grants, which they can able to set some businesses, or else if they can be given some seats, and OPM can able to identify a place of land, which these people can be which they can be taken there, and they can dig for themselves so they can able to get food. It will be a great achievement to them as people who have been moved out from the food support to the community.
My name is Rodaro Hayate. I'm from Sporoporo Village, Romogisabu County. The challenges I have seen from our brother refugees fishing in our area are like this. I find it is very difficult for them to get source of water to help themselves. And then there are no places like a land for producing their crops. In fact, that one is agriculture. Planting has become difficult for them. See, the government has to practice a frustration where these cut trees should be replaced. They should practice agriculture in these various places, so that people get enough food to avoid the poverty in our area. Government should ensure that there are laws for those who don't know about how to keep our environment fine. Those laws, if they are put, people will be well versed about the environment. And government should ensure that our people are taught, should be educated on how, if you practice agriculture, how you'll benefit from it. If you practice in a frustration, how good you will get benefit out of it.
Those were voices of refugees from South Sudan in Uganda's Bidibidi camp. They were speaking with journalist Catherine Nambi. Still on refugee issues, a third of the world's population, of the refugee population around the world, are found in Africa. On this year, International Refugee Day Thursday, Carl Sambri, the Norwegian Refugee Council's media advisor for East and Southern Africa, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that conflict has been one of the biggest drivers of refugees.
The all sorts of crises, all sorts of crises pushing people away from their homes, forcing them to flee from the war in Sudan, which we've seen for the last year has been growing, getting worse, getting fiercer, displacing more and more people, millions internally displaced, millions across into neighboring countries, drought, floodings, as well, climate change. So all sorts of crises. Sudan itself has displaced millions into extremely impoverished and crisis-ridden countries around it, from Chad to South Sudan. Poverty, there's lack of water, there's lack of medical facilities. My colleagues in these countries are really struggling to keep up with the influx of people who are seeking some kind of safety.
You mentioned these countries around Sudan, like they're going to countries in neighboring areas where things aren't really all that much better. I mean, the resources are stretched so thin in these other countries where they're trying to contend with their own problems, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was in Chad a few months ago just to check the situations and conditions of refugees fleeing from Sudan. And for the Chadians themselves, there is the absolute minimum is completely absent, from water to health treatment, medical facilities, schools. So, you know, when we're opening a school for refugees, it is also a school for local children, because some of them have never been to school, for example, in the border areas with Sudan, where the millions are fleeing. South Sudan has been facing crises for years, and now is also facing all the influx from Sudan as well. People, mind you, it is refugees, but also people of South Sudanese descent who had never set foot in South Sudan before. So all of a sudden, they're back home in a home which they've never lived, in which they almost have no connections. Right? So it's extremely vulnerable people who have faced all sorts of violence, rape, mass extermination of their village, of their families, extended families, women I've met who have seen their husbands held at gunpoint, all sorts of trauma that they are fleeing from, and there's so very little resources that can help us help them.
You mentioned you open schools and you have these medical needs too, which are a priority, and people who need food and water. How do you prioritize where you go to give it to these people, and how do you set up your infrastructure, basically? I guess you're mostly based in these border areas of those countries that you mentioned.
I mean, most important is coordination. Coordination is key with other NGOs, with the United Nations, trying to look for the gaps, bring out our specialization with other NGOs, which are specialized and also in other fields. So we have colleagues in other organizations who are doctors, whom like MSF, who we depend on, everyone depends on for the medical services in a place like Chad, where services are so basic, for example. And we provide, for example, education. We open schools based on needs. But obviously, there is the very stark reality that it's also based on the available funding. So we are constantly appealing and advocating with donors, with governments to provide that funding. We're all the time advocating for more resources, for better policies, for more access. And there is the political side, which we advocate for, which is extremely important, because that's the only way there could be a solution to any of the root causes of all these, from climate change to conflict. There needs to be the political engagement.
That's Carl Sambri, the Norwegian Refugee Council's media advisor for East and Southern Africa. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme. The U.S. Supreme Court last week struck down a ban on a gun accessory that allows many semi-automatic weapons to fire like machine guns. The decision keeps guns and gun owners at the center of this U.S. presidential campaign. VOA correspondent Scott Stans has our story.
Bump stocks are aftermarket additions that allow weapons to fire hundreds of bullets a minute. They were banned by then-President Donald Trump in 2018.
This morning, we also completed the process to issue a new regulation banning bump stocks.
Following a 2017 shooting at a music festival in Las Vegas that killed 60 people, the shooter used a bump stock to fire more than 1,000 rounds from a hotel window. Overturning that ban last week, the Supreme Court's conservative majority said the then-Trump administration overstepped its authority in outlawing bump stocks. The decision keeps guns a central campaign issue in this presidential election. The Trump campaign said Americans should respect the high court's decision. On Friday, Trump told a birthday rally in Florida that his election will safeguard gun rights in the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment.
We got to get people, gun owners, you're not going to have your gun very long if you don't, because they want to take everything away. They want to take your guns away. They want to take your ammunition away. They want to destroy the Second Amendment.
President Joe Biden's reelection campaign called on Congress to reinstate the bump stock ban. Vice President Kamala Harris.
When we think about the decisions others are going to make in November, there's a clear contrast between where we stand and the former president. Let's not forget, the former president literally said folks need to get over it as it relates to the gun violence issue in America. So let's take this seriously. Let's understand that we all have the ability to weigh in on this important issue.
Trump supporters in Congress back gun owners' rights to use bump stocks. Florida Congressman Byron Donalds.
The bump stocks, if you will, is really just a brace for people who have arm injuries who still actively shoot. That doesn't mean that they're going to target citizens. It never has.
Biden supporters in Congress say the Supreme Court decision will lead to more loss of life. California Congressman Adam Schiff.
Without a doubt, there'll be some future tragedy utilizing these bump stocks. And we will all ask ourselves, why is this necessary? Why do we have to live with this?
Nearly a third of Americans say they own a gun, according to the Pew Research Center. Before November's vote, the High Court is expected to rule on another gun issue, this one concerning gun rights for people who are under restraining orders for domestic violence. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, June 18, 2024. We'll now leave you with the song Asharal Haya by Russia. Listening to Russia and this love song, Azar Al-Haya. I'm your host, John Tanz, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Jumbe Hamza, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.